I could totally sell some bourbon bread pigs. That'd be awesome.
Bread's 30 minutes late on that. Yeah.
Well, that's where I thought you were going with the pig farm at first. I'm like, okay, he's going to take the slop and just, you know, say these are all Pappy Van Winkle pigs.
Bourbon Pursuit wouldn't be possible without the support of our Patreon community and with help of our following partners. If you're looking for a new glass that complements any drinking experience, whether it's neat, on the rocks, or with a cocktail, look no further than the Duo Glass from Aged & Ore. Use code PURSUIT to get 15% off your order and free shipping at agedandore.com. That's agedandore.com. Welcome back to the 25th recording of the Bourbon Community Roundtable. And before we go and hit off with the podcast, we got to go just through a little bit of the news. And really, there's not a whole lot of stuff that's happening nationally, except that Pappy and Antique Collection Frenzy has actually started to hit. There's the red dots that are showing up on the Bourboner tracking map. So go and see if your state's hit, and good luck hunting. We are also planning our 2019 barrel selections for our Patreon community, and just got to give a shout out to Tony from Keg & Bottle for making this happen and being our retail partner. If you have a need for having some whiskey delivered directly to your door, go check him out. Keg, the letter N, bottle.com. He's got over 700 whiskeys available online, and he can have them shipped out the very next day. Now, one thing that I'm super, super excited about, and if you are paying attention to any of our social handles on Monday, is the launch of Pursuit Spirits. Yes, the launch of Pursuit Spirits is actually our brand, but we have a label coming out of Pursuit Series. So we have our very own private label where we are hand-selecting barrels of bourbon and rye and bottling them uncut, unfiltered, at cask strength, because we know... we're like you, we're whiskey enthusiasts, we know what we like, and we love stuff at cask strength. So we're happy to be able to do this, and all the details for getting your hands on these bottles and information about each release. The first release is actually starting at the end of next month in November 2018. You can find all the information on pursuitspirits.com. And if you haven't been a Patreon community member yet, because maybe 20 or 18 barrels in 2018 was enough, or 16, well, we're actually going to have, in addition to the 20 barrels we're doing from Keg & Bottle, we're also ramping up and doing our own private label. And we're going to be doing 2 barrels a month starting in January 2019 of our private label Pursuit Series. And we couldn't be more excited to make this happen. You know, we just have to say thank you to all of our listeners, all of our Patreon community people, and everybody else that's supported us over the years to get to where we are today and being the number one podcast for bourbon. And we're just happy that we have this opportunity to bring this and sort of take this adventure to the next step. So I can also promise you that we're not going to use this podcast as a platform for advertising it or getting you to keep buying bottles of it. That's not what it's about. But we are going to just let you know about each new release every month as it does come out. So if you do want to follow more about the Pursuit Series private label that's coming out, make sure you follow Pursuit Spirits on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Kentucky Derby Museum's Legend Series, those tickets are again still on sale. The first one does begin in January. You can get your tickets at derbymuseum.org/legendseries. This is the 25th recording of the Bourbon Community Roundtable, and I forgot to mention it, but I guess you could call this our silver anniversary. I'm just very fortunate and glad that this group can come together once a month and discuss fun topics. This week, we're joined by Josh Reedford, who is the producer of the new AMC movie, Bullitt County, that opens in theaters this Friday, October 26th. You can check out our show notes for a link to the trailer. But we also discuss the fears of what would happen if a bourbon enthusiast won this $1.6 billion Mega Millions lottery. And then we also wrap up the show talking about brands and the sort of buy-sell trade of what's happening to them. And maybe there could possibly be another large buyout of a brand that's pretty well known. Maybe something such as like Four Roses. Who knows? We'll see. And if you haven't left a review yet, please do. That's how we get found. That's how we... people know more about the show. So if you haven't, go ahead and do that. we've got another call to action from today's Above the Char with Fred. And I know he got a lot of pingbacks, a lot of tags, and a bunch of social media posts for his request to say, let him know what the best sipping bourbon of 2018 is going to be. And there's another call to action today. And I'm not going to ruin it because I'm going to let you enjoy this week's episode. And now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. You know what's missing in bourbon? I mean, we have a lot of cool things going on. We've got tourism. We've got annual releases coming out. We've got the whole dusty movement. But there's really a lack of opportunity for pairing bourbon with food. As I looked at a pile of biscuits being smothered with gravy and the little pieces of sausage plumping out and the gravy just oozing between the buttermilk biscuits, I realized that I had never actually paired bourbon with biscuits and gravy. Now, that's odd considering that I have a passion for biscuits and gravy to the point that I call my friend John Little every time that I have a really great biscuits and gravy. He, too, shares the passion of biscuits and gravy. John's the CEO of Smooth Ambler Distilling, by the way, and he lives in West Virginia, and he does the same to me. Whenever he finds biscuits and gravy, he calls me and tells me about it or texts me. And as many times as we've been together and had biscuits and gravy, I can't recall a single time we paired it with Smooth Ambler bourbon, or any bourbon for that matter. So I hope to rectify that this week. And I also have an assignment for you. In the next few days, Halloween will commence, and our kids will be running through neighborhoods with sacks and fake plastic pumpkin heads and be sticking their hands into the doors and saying, trick or treat, give me something good to eat. People will be throwing candy in there, and they're gonna bring it home and pour it all out on the table, and they're going to be so excited they got all that candy. Well, I don't know what you do in your home, but in my home, I take a daddy tax. You should really take one too. Whether it's the mommy tax or the daddy tax, pick your favorite candies out of their stash and then pair bourbon with it. Tell me what bourbon is your favorite to go with a Heath bar, a Kit Kat bar, a Reese's Pieces, or whatever. You may find that Four Roses actually pairs quite differently than Maker's Mark. Or if you have one, check out Pappy Van Winkle with, say, an Almond Joy. Or see what 1792 tastes like with a York Peppermint Patty. And that's my assignment for you for this week, because we have to change the scenario of restaurants. Everybody wants to pair with wine. We should really start pushing the envelope on pairing with bourbon. And I believe it starts with good parenting at home. That means the daddy tax. And that's this week's Above the Char. Hey, you just told me what sipping bourbons I should be tasting to consider for the best bourbon of 2018. Sign up on fredminnick.com to see which ones I selected. If you want to follow me on Twitter, check me out at Fred Minnick or Instagram at Fred Minnick. Until next week, cheers.
Welcome back to another episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Kenny and Ryan and Fred here with a good majority of the Bourbon Community Roundtable, plus another special guest. And, you know, this is going to be a fun one because we've started kind of branching out the podcast a little bit in regards of some of the people we're talking to. It's not just all bourbon focused anymore. We're talking to some people that are in the industries, if you will, or have some sort of ties to it. And it kind of brings it all full circle. So we're getting some guests that have some touches and some ties with bourbon, but it's going to be really fun and kind of interesting to talk about this. Fred or Ryan, have you had a chance to kind of look at the trailer for the show that or the movie that we're going to talk about tonight?
I know Ryan was really excited about it because he's from Bullitt County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about it
briefly from Bullitt County, but that's well, why we like, excited. Like what,
born there and slapped on the ass and then moved to Bardstown.
Yeah, they're like, more opportunity in Bardstown. Let's pack our wagons and go south.
Just hit the old dusty trail, if you will.
That's right.
So as usual, before we kick this off, we're going to go around the horn and let the bloggers that have joined us introduce themselves. And since there is somebody here that is fresh with a brand new article this week, first time in over a year, Carrie Suburbia, how are you?
Yeah, actually wrote a non-review article the first time of the year. Thank you. I know you guys were waiting a long time. I felt the love for it.
I kept hitting refresh on my Suburbia, you know.
Yeah, I go every morning. So 372 days in a row, I've just gone there with nothing new. And
you know, I looked at the template for my website. I think I still have the original two-color template. So maybe I could upgrade the website a little bit. I need a little graphic design if anybody out there wants to work for free.
You'd be amazed how many people work for whiskey. So
that's true. I could send that. Blog is suburbia.com, S-U-B-O-U-R-B-I-A, and I'm mostly on Twitter, @bourbon_gamer. But I did just learn how to do the Instagrams, so I'm doing a little bit on the Instagrams here and there, so you can find me on there, @bourbon_gamer. And as usual, I'm on the Bourbon R Facebook group.
That's a good way to introduce Blake there, so go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, so I'm Blake from bourboner.com. All the social media is B-O-U-R-B-O-N-R. Post reviews, videos, and also sealbox.com for all your craft spirits. I like to get names that it's really hard to say and people always spell them wrong. So sealbox is sealbachs.com.
Like the hotel, right?
Exactly. But not trademark infringing on the hotel. They don't have online retail. So nice try. Not like the hotel.
Count one for the home team there. Yeah. All right, and Jordan.
Sure. This is Jordan. I'm one of three guys from BreakingBourbon.com. You can find us at Breaking Bourbon on all the social media and on Patreon. Also sign up for our newsletter, and you'll see all of our calendar updates. And it's a busy time for the calendar to be updating this fall season.
Hey, Jordan, congrats on your marathon finish or mini.
Thank you.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Hey, nice job. Where'd you go? Chicago?
No, we did Baltimore, state number 26.
Nice.
Yeah.
You want to explain to people what you are actually trying to accomplish?
Yeah, sure. So me and my wife are doing
I'm trying to. I've only been to one state, though.
We're doing a half marathon in every state. So good way to see the state or the states. Good way to try a bunch of different local whiskeys, too.
Let me know when you come to Atlanta. I'll point you to these houses.
Have you done a Florida half marathon yet?
We did. We did Florida already. We did. Okay. But I'll tell you what, I'll do Atlanta. I'll hit up Carrie's bunker. Then I'll just drive on down to Florida. And we'll just go from there.
Quick 6-hour trip.
Perfect.
Just Carrie will probably charge you to stay with him.
Just run it the entire time. You'll be.
Hey, I'm not from Bullitt County. You are.
And since we are in October, this was something that I found really weird. You saw some people like take these pledges on Facebook and different things that it's supposed to be sober October or mocktober, and people were making these mock cocktails. But I don't think that anybody around here really followed along with it. Any of you all?
Tonight I am. It's just water tonight.
Well,
yeah, I don't know what that says about my friends group on Facebook, but I haven't seen a single post about sober October.
Well, being in the trade for covering this business for a long time, we've lost a lot of like bartenders in the last like couple years, for mixing drugs and alcohol, various things. But it's kind of something serious that the industry is trying to push, but. It's an uphill battle, because people, I feel like people, we should be talking about personal responsibility versus like abstinence, which is, that's the same level of effort that got us prohibition. So it's kind of, the whole thing is weird, instead of like, my thing is like, instead of drinking four a day, maybe don't drink one day and drink one the next day, and You know, you don't have to be laying next to a trash can every weekend like Ryan does.
Moderation goes
on. Moderation.
Yeah.
That did happen.
Way to make us feel bad there, Fred.
So who is pushing it, though? Is it the industry that's pushing it or like the bartender's guild?
Yeah, so at Tales of the Cocktail, William Grant actually threw a party where there was no alcohol. So like the opening party was all about not drinking. And people were like, you know, you had bartenders there were like, what the fuck? And, and then you had other ones like, oh my gosh, that's so progressive. That's exactly what we want to be doing. You know?
And then 20 minutes later it ended.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, like the people who were saying it was such a wonderful thing, you would find them at like the Monteleone at the Carousel Bar, like drinking like
pounding Sazerac.
Pounding shit. So it was, I think if you're at a drinking convention, I think it goes without saying there's going to be some consumption. So, but I don't know. We got to figure something out. It's, you know, alcohol is definitely our friend, but you got to respect it. And, and for whatever reason, we've never been able to find that, you know, nice balance where we can say as a populace, we can't educate people. Right. So we have to ban it. And so you actually have a lot of efforts to ban alcohol advertising in this country, to ban, you know, even just talking about it. You have the health nuts who are saying that alcohol is the reason why we're all dying of everything, which is not true. So it's a tough time right now.
I mean, I could have sworn not too long ago there was a study that said like a glass of wine a day or a glass of whiskey a day actually makes you live longer. But I think there's a lot of those cuckoo sort of things out there.
It's like that's like carbs are bad, carbs are good.
So I think our next episode, my next blog article that I'm working on is actually about the health.
Well, in 2030?
Yeah. It's the health of bourbon. So the next time we're going to talk about that bourbon is actually healthy.
Well, tread very lightly there, my friend. Be very careful. Yeah, but just because, claims? That's one where the Federal Trade Commission will actually – you know, police that shit. So
I think in front of everything I say.
I don't think I'm the.
Yeah, you'll need you just want to be able to back up everything. You know, so like
very large disclaimer.
I feel great. That's what I'm going to say. I drink every night. Look at me. I mean, I drink every night. Look like this.
You can do the before and after photos. Like this is before I drank a fifth, and this is after.
Yeah, when I gained 30 pounds. Yeah, we'll go back to my high school picture.
Yeah. But I'm happy to do that for you if you like. Make sure you don't cross any lines.
And smokes a full pack of Marlboro Reds while he's at it, too.
Snorts cocaine. Yeah. For God's sake.
Like a hell of a time. Let's keep that party going. All right. So let's go ahead and move on to talking about our guest tonight. So tonight, we got to talk to something more exciting than that. So tonight, we have the producer of a new film that is now making its way out called Bullitt County. We have the producer, Josh Reedford. Bullitt County tells the story of four friends who reunite for a bachelor party in the fall of 1977 to hunt for buried prohibition money on the Bluegrass Bourbon Trail, only to become ripped apart by greed, corruption, and murder. It's a winner of 6 Best Picture Awards from film festivals nationwide. I want to say, Josh, welcome to the show tonight.
Thanks so much, guys. It's great to be here with you.
So before we kind of dive into the movie a little bit, you know, do you have a fascination with bourbon? I mean, you wanted to come on a Bourbon Community Roundtable, so let's hear it.
Yeah, well, I I wasn't always a bourbon drinker. It kind of was something that myself and my writer director partner David McCracken, we sort of just kind of stumbled into. That was probably 4 years ago, maybe. He was working on another film that involved a lot about the bourbon industry, and so he was living in LA at the time. We're both actually from Southern Indiana, so we're kind of like right on the fringes of, you know, bourbon country. And so he was coming back to do some research and invited me to come along. And so we just started hitting up, you know, as many distilleries as we could. And you know, I went into it very hesitantly. I had some bad experiences with, you know, bad whiskey in college, as I'm sure a lot of people did. And so, but I really kind of just came to fall in love with just bourbon as a drink and bourbon as a culture and just everything about, I mean, the history of it. And it's just like there's such a pride about bourbon, both in Kentucky specifically, but also just with our country. You know, I mean, it really kind of defines a lot of like the American culture and like the heart of America. I don't know. So I just kind of like really, really fell in love with it, and David did as well. And so when we were pitching ideas for what we wanted to be our first film, it was kind of loosely based on our travels on the bourbon trail. And that's kind of where all this came from. So yeah, now I'm kind of hardcore bourbon. That's like my go-to thing these days.
Well, good. You'll fit in. Not a problem.
Perfect.
Welcome to the crowd.
Thanks.
So was this the first film that you said was based off bourbon, or was there one prior to Bullitt County?
There was one that he was writing for a guy who I think he's also from Kentucky originally. He also lives in LA now, but he had hired David and another guy to write a script for him, and I don't actually think that film went anywhere. But this Bullitt County is the first one of with David and I's production company. So yeah, this is our first one.
So kind of give a little bit, I kind of gave maybe a little bit of the premise of the show there. Kind of talk about, you know, a little bit more about the movie, what the film, what people can expect and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I'll give the big disclaimer, that I think some people like to yell at us about. We didn't actually shoot anything in Bullitt County proper. We shot a lot around it and, you know, near it and things that look like it, but there is unfortunately not anything that actually takes place in Bullitt County. And a lot of that really just has to do with, we wanted to shoot at some distilleries. And I mean, you know, everybody drinks bourbon these days, and all of the distilleries are working their asses off to keep up with production. And so to let a full on film crew come in for a week, it wasn't smart.
When you're shutting down production so you can come in and film.
Exactly. You can imagine Mila Kunis was with you. Did you tell him that Mila Kunis was with you?
You know, that probably would have gotten some doors open for us. Maybe next time.
Oh, she just called out this morning. Sorry, guys. It's just us.
Damn it. Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then the other one is that a lot of people like to call bullshit because there's no such thing as a bluegrass bourbon trail, and especially not in the 1970s, because, you know, the bourbon trail is kind of a newer thing. So that is not a shortcoming on our part. We actually did know that there was no such thing, but it just works narratively, and, you know, it's kind of our homage to the bourbon trail. But yeah, so that's kind of where the whole story came from. And as you mentioned, yeah, it's this kind of, it's partly thriller, but it's also kind of just like, we based it on a lot of 1970s films that we liked, like Easy Rider, where the whole first part of the movie is just kind of this fun romp with these friends, that are going to bourbon distilleries as part of a bachelor party. And so, yeah, the first part of the movie is just, it's just fun. And then, like you said, they kind of hear about this legend of buried prohibition money, that's supposedly hidden out in the wilderness of Bullitt County, and they go off in search of that.
And burnt up forest.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they take a detour by Ryan's birthplace in Bullitt County? Can we confirm or not? Stops.
It's in the reeds of the Top Creek.
It actually takes place in his childhood home.
I'm actually in the movie.
The movie is loosely based on Ryan's life. He's actually 74.
Exactly. So why'd you choose Bullitt County versus like Nelson County or Fayette County, you know, where I guess most of the distilleries are?
Sure.
Jim Beam is technically in Bullitt County, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, we get that question a lot, and it's honestly, it's just because the name sounds the coolest, and it's got, you know, that double meaning of bullets, and, you know, since that plays in pretty heavily, and yeah, for people that aren't really necessarily familiar with Kentucky and, you know, all of the counties, I think it's one that just, it's just got such a strong name to it.
The Bullitt family, who owns Oxmoor Farm here in Louisville, that's, I guess, named after their family.
Okay. Bullitt. Yeah, I thought I remembered that from some of our research. It's their their fictional ancestors play a role, but
very cool.
Yeah.
I just watched half the trailer. It does look like a scary movie, but looks awesome, man.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. It definitely, it's got some, you know, it's got some scares in it for people that like the suspense. But it's also just, it's a lot of fun too.
I just thought it was going to be like Ryan and his parents, like
shackled up or something.
Ryan should never mentioned that he was born in Bullitt County. We're way off track now. Is there official release date yet?
It comes out in theaters this Friday, October 26th. And it's playing in, I think it's 8 cities nationwide, including Louisville and Cincinnati. That's in that neighborhood. And then also Evansville in southern Indiana. And then a lot further. And then depending on how that goes, we'll try and branch out some more. If it doesn't make it into a city where, you know, near you, it comes out on VOD and DVD at the end of February.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So a legal question for you. Chose to use the Bluegrass Bourbon Trail.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky Bourbon Trail is a trademark term, and I know that movies still have to get like trademark approval. Did you get any kind of did you talk to the owners of that trademark, the Kentucky Distillers Association, or anything like that?
We did. We had conversations with them very early on, and that's why we ended up calling it the Bluegrass Bourbon Trail, so that we wouldn't be, you know, infringing on either the official Kentucky Bourbon Trail or the craft Bourbon Trail. We wanted to stay away from that, and you know, they didn't really have any problem with us making the movie. It was more of they didn't want us like using the Kentucky Bourbon Trail to help promote the film. And so we've tried to stay away from that as much as possible, even though, you know, it is, you know, our homage to it, because we have nothing but love for, you know, for bourbon and the trail and everything like that. But just, yeah. What's that?
I said, and if you would have used it, those lawyers can be expensive.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So it's easier to stay out of that mess.
Well, it's probably a smart idea to do that, because if all of a sudden it is associated with that and you're like, honey, let's go on our next trip to the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. And she's like, hold on, greed, corruption, and murder. I'm out on this one.
Exactly. I mean, obviously our hope would be that it really takes off and it, you know, cause I think if you're not super either like a really, really hardcore bourbon drinker or you're not from the area, I think, you know, the bourbon trail itself is not known in like wide circles by just the like lay person. Cause we've mentioned it before and, you know, people don't really know what we're talking about. And I think in our ideal world, this would make people more aware of it. So we kind of, We try to play the game as well as we can to get people to know about it without being overt about it.
Talk about who are your stars? You had said you don't have any major stars, but
hello.
Talk them up. Who are your actors and actresses?
Yeah. So the lead is a guy named Mike Nelson. He's actually from Indiana originally. He works out in LA now. If you've watched the show Blackish, he plays Nurse Larry on there. He's kind of a recurring character. He's also been in, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 Geico commercials. You would recognize his face. But really, really amazing guy. Comes from a comedy background. David McCracken also plays one of the leads. He's also happens to be the writer, director, and my business partner. He's kind of always been attached to the project. The one that I think that people probably would recognize by face, if not in name, is Richard Reilly. He plays the elderly gentleman in the film, and if you've seen Office Space, he's the guy that makes the jump to conclusions, Matt. And he's been in like 300 films. He's kind of all over the place, but he was fantastic. Came in for a week to shoot out all his stuff. Just a really, really neat guy.
Well, listen, I want you to know that I can grow a beard for any role, and I would work great with Mila Kunis or Jennifer Gardner, any of those people.
Who's Jennifer Gardner? Is that Jennifer Gardner's sister?
I was going with what's the other one that issues in Passengers and the one where she shot kids with bow and arrow and stuff. You know what I'm talking
about. Oh, yeah, yeah, Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Way off.
Way off.
Samsonite.
Harry, that's a Luvillian, so be tread lightly on what you say about Jennifer Lawrence.
Okay.
Josh, I bet you didn't know anything. When you think you were coming on here tonight, you didn't realize that we were just trying to plug you to try to get roles in your next film.
I had no idea what I was walking into.
Yeah. Josh is going to go back and his business partner's going to be like, so how'd it go?
Movie that was a huge mistake. Going
well? He's like, no, why did I say yes to that?
Either like that, I know, it's I know where Ryan grew up, though.
Right. The truth revealed.
I'm basically going to come away from this having the full cast for Bullet County 2 already.
Obviously, I'm the lead man. I'll go.
as long as Carrie dies first.
Yeah.
But I want to really.
Blake's the bachelor.
Me and Kenny are going to play twin brothers. And
you know, I can be the couple that gets attacked first, but can I just be a good couple?
So quickly talk about some of the awards that it's already won.
Oh yeah. So I think like you mentioned, we've gotten Best Picture at I think 6 festivals now, including the Macon Film Festival down in Georgia and the Catalina Festival out in California, and several others. So that's been really cool. Oh, we also at the Hoboken Festival up in New Jersey, we got Best Director. And Mike won for Best Actor. So it's been, it's gotten very, very positive response from people, and hoping that, you know, after this theatrical release, maybe we can lock down a few other critics awards come award season in, you know, December and January. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. Another question about this, you know, you were looking at bringing bourbon into this. I mean, do you see bourbon coming more and more into your field as being not a center of a story, but somehow focused around the story? Because you had mentioned that you had worked on another film that people are writing focused on bourbon. So you probably have more exposure to this than we do.
I definitely think that it's something that's coming across people's radar in the industry. And whether it's, you know, films that are specifically about bourbon or just bourbon, you know, appearing in media. I mean, you know, you take that Jessica Jones series, and she's always downing, is it Wild Turkey, I think?
She's pounding bourbon.
Yeah. I mean, she's always got bourbon. It's, you know, very prominent. So, I mean, it's definitely a thing that I think, you know, I think the entertainment industry is realizing, like, hey, bourbon is booming right now. It's popular. People like to see it. People feel comfortable seeing it. So let's put it in there as much as we can. And, you know, we've been very, very cognizant about that as well. And I think going forward, whenever we can kind of, even if it's not just in your face about it, but just like, oh, yeah, there's some bourbon on the table. It's just kind of our little
nod
to it. Yeah.
No, sir. Looking forward to seeing the movie.
Thank you. Looking
forward to seeing it.
Thanks so much for letting me chat with you guys.
Absolutely.
Cool. Thanks for coming on, Josh.
Yeah, thanks. I'll hang around.
I was going to say, feel free to hang around and jump in.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, if at some point something strikes out at you, feel free to jump back in. But again, Josh, thank you again for coming on and telling us about Bullet County. So as he had mentioned, make sure you go. It'll check it out in theaters starting Friday this week, the 26th. So go and check it out. And I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to be really, really cool. So another thing in just kind of, I guess you could say, pop culture that happened this week was the $1 billion lottery that nobody won. And now this week it's going to be at $1.6 billion. I have a theory that if somebody with inside the bourbon community wins this.
This episode of Bourbon Pursuit is made possible through listeners like you, supported through Patreon, and with partnerships brought to you by the following.
Versatility. It's what's been missing in the glass space. We've got Rocks, Glencairns, Copitas, Brandy Snifters, and more to accommodate a wide range of drinks and the way we enjoy it with or without ice. It took a Kickstarter campaign to change things up, and this is where the Duo Glass from Aged in Ore comes in. It's a 10-ounce double-wall glass that eliminates the need for coasters. It's tulip-shaped that allows your sense of smell to pick up a wide array of flavors. And it has 1-ounce indicators, so no need for more glassware when making cocktails
or pouring just the right amount of your favorite bourbon. It's also ice ball ready that comes with its own 2-inch ice mold that snugly fits into the glass for a slow melting experience. For a limited time, Bourbon Pursuit listeners get 15% off orders and standard free shipping at agedinor.com using the code PURSUIT. So go over to agedinor.com, that's agedinor.com, and get your duo glasses today.
I have a theory that if somebody with inside the bourbon community wins this, it's just going to be bad news just for the secondary market.
Literally every bottle will be gone for the next 6 months.
There's just going to be like careless buy it nows. Like it doesn't even matter what the price is anymore. And so any other theories on what could possibly happen if somebody in the bourbon community was to win this $1.6 billion?
It's going
to
be definitely a distillery be started, you know, by that.
Oh, hell no. What would happen is somebody would go to a Mark Brown from Buffalo Trace and bring a fucking briefcase of money and say, I want that warehouse, I want that warehouse, I want that warehouse. And he says no, and then you put up another briefcase of money, like, I want that warehouse, I want that warehouse. That's what I would do. I would not build a distillery. I would not buy brands. I would go and buy warehouses filled with stocks 8 years and older because, oh, my God, you could – own whiskey after that, and none of that, you can just drink it. So
I would just get the large straw and put it straight into the barrel.
The whiskey, right? Like you would own it in a figurative sense, and literally you would own it.
Yeah,
you would own it.
It's a good legal term.
I mean, let's think about the most in-demand bourbons. The majority of them are coming from Buffalo Trace, and
100%,
and that's for good reason. I mean, as much as we like to, you know, talk about the problems with the secondary market and how we can't ever get Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, fact is it's really great whiskey. And so if I win that lottery, first of all, I'm hiring a lawyer, and I'm not doing anything. No one's ever going to know about it, but lawyers have that damn confidentiality clause that they take to death. And the lawyer will do all my bidding, and it'll probably be Brian.
I was going to say, there you go.
And Brian's going to tell us, guaranteed he can't keep it. His secret is not safe on the round table. We'll get our bourbons in him all of a sudden.
Anybody else, what would you do if you won the $1.6 million and you had something with bourbon? Like, would you say, like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to find every Wax Drip, Van Winkle, or A.H. Hirsch? Or
I've actually thought about
– Actually – oh, yeah.
Real quick, I would visit somebody that is prominent on secondary sites. I would actually visit his house and go look at everything in his basement and probably write him a check.
Buy collections?
Like, what's it going to take for the entire thing? Well, that's what I was thinking. Do like a bar somewhere, and then you could just do everything. You know, buy up collections. Well, I guess you couldn't own the,
only
the
certain
warehouses
state.
Too because you couldn't be in multiple tiers, but...
Jack Rose's.
Yeah, I was gonna say build Jack Rose's part two just to your tailoring. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Blake Rose's sounds like a really cool boy.
how do you spell that, Blake? To be, you know,
it's kind of like Rose Chris. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like Ruth's Chris where you hyphenate.
It's kind of like starting a website named after a very famous hotel.
But they have nothing to do with each other, just to be clear. TM.
But no, I mean, there's a lot of people on here that are talking about the lot. I put it in there. I said, if you had $1.6 billion to do with bourbon, what would you do? And some people were following suit. They said, I'd open up a bourbon bar and I'd buy out private collections and kind of stock it with that. Bourbon Blind said, He said, I'd actually build warehouses like Fred talked about, but I'd go around just buying truckloads of bourbon from different places. And I guess at that point you own it. You could
will it,
it. You could do whatever you wanted to try to figure out something new. And the fun thing is you don't even have to sell a bottle if you don't want.
Yeah.
You could just do private picks with all your friends and then they're the only ones that can buy it.
You see, Rob McCarthy said, get a new wife who doesn't complain about all the bourbon I have.
I was going to read that one out loud.
That's perfect.
Wrong.
I actually missed that one, but that's hilarious. But would anybody else, would you actually buy a distillery to be able to do it? And that's what Matt Cusick said. He'd buy a distillery and create a brand, name himself the Master Distiller, and then pay himself to tell the same story and sign bottles for the rest of his life.
I kind of like that idea.
A distillery sounds like so much work, though. Like,
I'll name it
like
Bullet
you
County.
You have to do the hard part. Like, I want to do the easy part where I just taste it and say, yeah, put that in a bottle.
Yep.
Oh, I've got it. I've got it now, you know, because everyone in the distilling business likes to say they were the first. You can say you were the first master distiller to win the lottery.
There you go.
You know, so that's...
No,
that's
the first something. Billionaire master distiller.
There you go.
Master distiller.
Mm-hmm.
There's a goal.
And your grandpa actually had the same recipe. That's the best part.
I'm a billionaire. And I never even sold a single bottle. It's like, how'd that even work?
I guess the question is, would you have to do a lot of work if you bought the distillery? I mean, if you have $1.6 billion, do you really...
You could hire someone.
Yeah.
You could just buy barrels and drink them with a straw.
I think I kind of like... Well, I like that idea. Just exactly. Just get a big barrel in your basement. Boom, put a straw in it. What are you drinking tonight? What's ever in that barrel?
Just put it on tap. You know, just get bourbon on tap. And just put a couple Pappy barrels around and then a couple... Weller Special Reserve and see if anyone can tell the difference.
Maybe pull another Pappy heist, but do it the right way. And
just buy out the market.
Truck a lot of cash. Drop it off.
But pay them for it.
Yeah, but actually give them money for it instead.
Matt Cusick kind of brought up a good point as well. He said, you know, what would you do about distilleries that just wouldn't sell you barrels, right? And you say, like, I want to go do barrel picks or I want to have this particular barrel in my inventory. What would you go about doing that? Would you just say, all right, well, I'll just buy you out?
I think you're dead to me. Has a price tag. It's a business at the end of the day. You know, they know that they don't need to sell it in bulk because they can sell it in their own bottle and make more. If you give them the same price that they would make that way, I doubt many would have a problem with that. But
I think some would do. I think some just, I mean, like, I feel like BT, Buffalo Trace, I'm sure they've been thrown so many money offers for Pappy that they won't, I don't think they would take it. I don't think Mark Brown would ever take it.
So here's what I would do. I would buy the next closest property and then buy 600 hogs and start a hog farm right there until their value goes so far down, they come begging to me to buy their barrels.
I'll be knocking on your door.
It'll be like driving through Butchertown.
Yeah.
I like Rare Bird said, I'd make my own magazine and call it Bourbon Plus Plus.
Speaking of trademarks, maybe you'll be partnering with Blake on that one.
Brian's my attorney, so please send all questions to him.
You know, he's my attorney too, so is he going to be the judge as well? I mean,
yeah. He'll work it out in mediation with himself.
Yeah. And charges both double.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of things that we could think that we want to do with a lot of money if we had it just to blow on bourbon. And hopefully one we'll see. Hopefully on Tuesday or maybe Friday this week, we'll see what happens. I can't imagine what would happen on Tuesday if nobody won again. But by the time this comes out, it will be Thursday. So we'll see what happens. But
you know,
is it too late to buy a ticket?
I haven't even bought a ticket.
I can see Trump winning this.
Guys, it's Monday. We're recording this on Monday. It doesn't roll till Tuesday. So, yes, you still have time to buy a ticket.
Your chance of not buying a ticket and buying a ticket only slightly, very slightly increases. Like, I think there was a guy at Georgia Tech, a professor, who basically said, you will never win the lottery, but somebody has to win, right?
Might as well be you.
That's what they want you to think.
Mm-hmm.
He's working for the enemy.
The guy also doesn't recommend flu shots and thinks that fluoride's so bad, right?
You know, on this topic of, and Fred, you might be able to answer this, on the topic of what distilleries could you buy out, what distillery is actually owned by the largest corporation that probably has the most money behind it? You know, Diageo is one. Yeah. We got Beam Suntory. You've got Kieran. Like, what's the biggest one?
I would say that the... you know, the way to approach that is like, what distillery has most American whiskey interest, or what parent company has the most American whiskey interest? Diageo is obviously the largest, you know, spirits company, but they could give two shits about American whiskey. You know, they focus on Crown Royal heavily, and they focus on heavily Scotch. And for good reason. That's what their company stronghold is. You've seen Tom Bullitt kind of bust through that company and say, hey, look at me. Look what American whiskey can do. And then they started paying attention. And then they started, they brought in Nicole Austin at George Dickel. And they're, and she's kind of doing a little bit of that same thing as finally getting people to pay attention to George Dickel. But I would say that they would not be there when times are bad. That company is the first one to spin something off. They did that in the early 90s with what is Stitzelweller, but back then it was called Old Fitzgerald Distillery, and they spun off all their brands that they got from Glenmore. You know, so they have a history of when times get tough, you know, they get rid of American whiskey. That's the DNA of that company. Beam Suntory is so tightly connected to Jim Beam. But you know, Maker's Mark is kind of like, is also in the Jim Beam portfolio, but it's on its own island. They don't mess with Maker's Mark, and you know, it's the Maker's Mark from a brand perspective is probably the sexiest brand in the American whiskey category outside of Jack Daniel's to like buy, you know. So if anyone was going to really, you know, put together a lot of money and go after a brand, it would be them. Another brand that would be kind of a sexy brand and wouldn't necessarily be easy pickings, but would probably have an interested seller if they came with the right pot of cash and Four Roses. But
I thought you were going to say Pursuit Spirits.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
we can only hope. We can only hope.
I'm told there's already expansion plans and an offer on the table. So,
yep, we're going to double our barrels in one day.
But you're looking at like you're looking at a very difficult question. But if it were speculation and there was all the money in the world and American whiskey was clear that it wasn't going to go away, and you really wanted to make a splash, I would say the two brands you would go after would be Four Roses and Maker's Mark.
Not Heaven Hill with all their portfolio?
Penetrating the Shapira family to sell would be very, very difficult. Getting them to sell off a brand or two, absolutely. But then you're probably getting a brand and not the whiskey. Like maybe they spin off you know, a brand that's not as close to them. Like they're not going to give up Evan Williams or Elijah Craig. That's like, that's sewn into who they are, you know, but I could see them selling something like,
it's a good thing they have like 400 labels.
Yeah. I mean, they could sell a lot of labels off. I mean, one that would make sense to me that they should sell is T.W. Samuels. I'd love to see that get back in the hands of, you know, the Maker's Mark family, Rob Samuels. I'd love to see them get T.W. Samuels back. But, other than that, you know, there's not like Heaven Hill. I couldn't see Heaven Hill do anything. Sazerac's definitely not letting Buffalo Trace go. You know, 1792 is an interesting, you know, distillery that historically gets kind of moved around a lot, but it's also a, you know, what we would consider to be like an MGP sort of distillery. And by the way, that's another interesting one, the MGP facility in Lawrenceburg, Indiana. But I don't know. What was the question? I'm just going off of like.
I feel like we're just naming them all. I think we sold. Named all the big five or six.
Well, Wild Turkey's interesting too.
Do we still have viewers?
Yeah. Wild Turkey, we probably don't, by the way. But Wild Turkey is an interesting brand because, you know, I don't feel like Campari has fully reached what Wild Turkey's potential is. And, you know, they were close. And then I don't know what happened. They started changing their labels and their packaging 15 times. And, you know, they're going to have another bottle change here. So they have a lot of inconsistency with marketing Wild Turkey. But I actually think their whiskey's gotten really, really good in the last 5 years.
So I got another kind of question, and I'll sort of throw it out to anybody else that wants to answer too, is, you know, we talked about a lot of these brand names. You know, you say 1792, you say Buffalo Trace, Evan Williams, and a lot of these are just so ingrained by these brands, it's almost become like an identity. And to say that, like, all of a sudden Diageo puts in a bid for 1792, do you really think that you could see some of these big conglomerates actually start poaching brands from other places? And would consumers even care?
That's actually the history. We've seen so the historical, we've already seen it happen, right? So Smooth Ambler's doing well. Pernod Ricard comes in. High West is doing well. Constellation comes in. And, you know, when you see these smaller brands, Leap Brothers in Colorado would be one that I would say would be on people's radars. Westland for me was like, you know, that was one of the great independent craft distillers. And then they get, acquired. Hudson Baby Bourbon, which I know is not anyone's favorite here at this round table, but they have built a really incredible brand and had great market penetration. William Grant came in real quickly and got them. So you do see that from time to time. But do you see like the conglomerates come in and pluck a big brand from another one? Yeah, I mean, it happens.
Yeah, I think the thing that I was really going for is that Matt kind of said, he goes, it happens in the 80s and 90s, but would you expect it to actually happen today with as big as bourbons being and a lot of these brands being that identity? Could you actually see that happening today?
I don't, because people are going to capitalize on what they have right now. I mean, they're not selling right now. They might.
Too hot. Thing is too hot right now.
Yeah, if they see maybe it's starting to downtrend and they might, but not right now. I mean, it's they just got too much upside right now to sell.
I don't know. I don't see it any different than professional league sports. You know, you trade a superstar, you buy a superstar. It could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it is at its peak, you know, the end is, you know, it's going to go down the hill at some point. So why not do it when it's at its peak?
Yeah, very true.
Well, people have been trying to buy Four Roses for a while, you know, so that was one. That was a brand that I thought could really get purchased, you know, when the tariffs started coming in, because they were very vulnerable, you know, to tariffs. And, you know, there was a big rumor that they were about to be bought by Constellation a while back. And I did some digging, and there was no offer on the table. There was no nothing. And basically it was business as usual. But, you know, Four Roses is one where if it's going to happen, like if someone's going to amass a treasure chest of money and they're going to go after a big brand, it's going to be Four Roses.
So is it Kieran that holds them right now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kieran's owned them since the early 2000s.
That makes it really weird, though.
I would say if they were to let them go, then Kieran would be closing a lot of doors for their spirits portfolio, because Four Roses sure does open a lot of doors.
All right. So let's go ahead and let's switch gears to something maybe a little more fun, because Carrie, as we had mentioned, came out with he's actually a blogger once again. He actually does have he has an article. So he technically is able to live up to his title. And this article that he kind of came out with was talking about inside of the mind of a bourbon fanatic. And so, Carrie, I kind of want to let you talk about this, and we'll kind of talk about, you know, our own stories behind each one of these things as well.
Yeah, I think the desire to create this article came from me just being tired of us always disagreeing on everything. I think when you look at the hobby in general, you know, everybody disagrees on what's overrated or what's too expensive or what's good or what's not good. And we always talk about the things we disagree on. But there's so much that we have similar that I felt like, you know, and this just comes from whenever I'm hanging out and we're talking, we're like, man, I can't believe I did so-and-so. You know, I think it's just kind of a fun article where we kind of realize there's idiosyncrasies that we have as bourbon, you know, hobbyists, and just kind of thought about them and wrote them down. That actually took me a month to kind of come back into the article and back into it with more ideas. But yeah, it's just a fun little article of stuff that we all kind of do together, I think.
I got to tell you, I really appreciate that, Carrie. And let me tell you why. I get, as you all know, I get tagged in a lot of stuff, and I write, I talk, I'm always doing something. And I get a lot of support, but man, I get a lot of, you know, a lot of the other side of stuff. And I am all about a good disagreement and hashing it out. But I mean, I've been in some forums where, you know, people, actually a forum I wasn't in, someone made a veiled threat against my son. And there, people in bourbon can get really fucking nasty. And I don't know if that's bourbon or if it's the internet or what, but you know, we have got to find a way to bring the spirit back, to bring that joy back and find those commonalities. And frankly, you know, that story that you wrote, I mean, it could really be, you know, something that sparks it.
I hope so. That's kind of the goal, is to make us all realize at the end of the day, you know, we all love bourbon. We love.
I saw myself in every single one of them, Carrie.
I know, right?
Well, so for anybody that's listening, let's all choose one and kind of talk about what it relates to you, because I'll tell you this one as well, because I think it was where was it? Number 8. So your wife orders 2 boxes from Amazon. One box is small, so you recycle it. The other box could easily fit 2 bottles of bourbon for shipping, so you take it down to the basement or put it in the garage. I've got an amassed.
I literally did this yesterday.
I've got like a pyramid, like it's a tower of cardboard in my basement right now, and I'm just waiting for it. Basically, when the new year hits, if I haven't gotten rid of it, then I throw it all away and then I start over again when the new year hits. So it's sort of my my yearly ritual of purging of old shipping boxes. But yeah, you see a good box and you're like, well, that's actually it's vertical. It's not horizontal. Like, that's a good one. You're not gonna hear the glug go. That's a keeper.
Yeah, so, you'll eventually, your significant other will eventually start finding them for you. And they'll say, hey, you want to keep this box for your booze? Like, yeah, actually, I do. That's a great box.
Anybody else have one they want to relate to?
Yeah, I think for me, it was number 3? Yeah, it was number 3. So you go to a new restaurant, right, with your loved one, and they're getting seated, and you're like just scanning the bar. That's it. Yeah. First of all, right, let's look at the bar, right? You don't even go to your seat. Totally hits home.
I'm number 3 as well. In fact, my wife, we just sit at the bar. But she also likes, yeah, but we've been married for 11 years, so it's kind of, you know, now it's over. You know, it's just like sit at the bar or get the really good seat in the corner where our back's against the wall and I can see the bar. So I like watching the bartenders work. I like seeing how they shake and stir and, you know, and how they pour their beers. It just, it's kind of, to me, that's, to me, the bartenders are the first line of defense against stupid in this world. So I really enjoy watching them work. But yeah, I'm definitely number 3.
Now, another question with that is how many times do you guys actually, because we'll all do that, but then you'll open up the menu, you'll look through the bourbon list and you'll go, I've already got all these at home. Yeah. I'm just going to love a cocktail.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There's like, I'm not paying 15 for Eagle Rare. Ugh. No way. Ordering it. Well,
that's what I liked about, I don't remember what number it was, but about the beach vacation, I'll have this discussion. My wife's like, do you really need to bring 15 bottles? We're going to be there for 3 days. I'm like, well, I don't know what I want to drink. There's other people. They may want to try some stuff. Right. And who knows? Maybe there's an impromptu bourbon tasting that I need to host.
I'll give an update for that. So it's number 11 is beach vacations are tough for bourbon guys. We need to bring enough bourbon that we don't get stuck with just 1 or 2 bottles. Significant others, please don't get mad and see how many we end up actually bringing.
So I'm literally going like, this. My clothes bag and my bourbon bag.
One bottle per day is like a good kind of rule of thumb. But I just want to mention the number 2, and I'll read this one. You take a wrong turn on the way to the farmer's market or some new trendy restaurant, and you go through a very seedy area of town. Your significant other is anxious for you to find your way out, but you're too busy looking side to side for the worst looking liquor store you can spot until you map out a return trip. So this happened to my wife and I. We went to the DeKalb Farmers Market, which is kind of on the other end of town. And I don't know how I took the wrong turn, but I was in a bad area. But man, I was so happy. Just looking around the side. My wife was screaming at me to turn on Waze and get out of there. And I was just, she's like, stop looking at liquor stores. I'm like, yeah, but look how nasty it looks. There are dusty bourbons in there. And I mapped out a couple spots. I never made it back over there, but she was so pissed at me for that.
So I'm packing for the beach on Friday. And I think 6 is a good number because that's what you can fit in a bottle tote bag.
Yeah.
You
know, so that's,
explain, read off 6 so people can hear it.
I use the Bourbon Pursuit bag everywhere I go on my trips. It's a little 6 bottle holder that I use. It's awesome.
It is a good bag.
But yeah,
Ryan, read off 6 so people know it. Yeah.
So I went there Labor Day and we were going through this we went to, so number six is you have a planned family trip to DC. Everyone else is planning the sequence of museums you will visit, but you are too busy to figure out when you'll hit Jack Rose. So I literally was doing this Labor Day and like U of L was playing Alabama and they're like, we really want to watch the game. And I was like, well, Jack Rose has TVs upstairs that you all can go watch the game and we can go downstairs. And so I told him I did that.
We went to DC. I was not as impressed as, other people are with it. You know, I feel like when you have an amazing,
it doesn't surprise me.
When you have an amazing selection like that, where bottles are still there, you know, then you look at the price list and you're like, okay, so this is why everything is still here.
I think there is also one that you're missing on here, and it's because of it's, you know, being in this, we get a lot of emails that say, hey, I'm planning a trip to Bourbon Country, planning a trip to Bardstown, wherever. I'd love to have some ideas. We plan on going to here, and hopefully we're going to go to Willett and maybe something will get dropped. That's always in there is like, I hope something will drop at Willett on.
And it never does.
And it never does.
It never does. It's in there saying they were going to
get the 4-year rye every time.
Which I just got today from somebody brought back from Kentucky, the 4-year rye. I'm actually excited about it. I think it'll be good.
Which was another one that you had on here was number four, is that a friend mentions that they have a work trip in Kentucky next week. And your first two thoughts are they driving and how close to Bardstown will they be?
Yeah, just happened. I wrote that one 2 months ago. Literally just happened with a friend like this week. I was like, you're driving? He said, yeah. I was like, yes. Awesome.
Perfect. Are you willing to make 25 stops on your route there?
Blake, I love your idea of having an impromptu bottle tasting. I think the same thing all the time.
You just never know.
I'm like, oh, you never know. Somebody might somebody random. They want to try six different bourbons.
You might want to bring two tote bags.
I mean, at Disney once. Fun.
Yeah, just post up in Disney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Inside Disney or at the hotel? Like,
Mickey's behind me next to Snow White. Yeah,
it was in a bar. It was in a bar. Somebody there, like, they had my book on the bar, and I was like, yeah, that's my book. And we just did an impromptu tasting.
Like, all right, come on, bourbon guy, tell us something about it.
Yeah, there was a whole crowd kind of gathered, and we're going back next year. It's great. No, this isn't a Disney podcast, though.
Yeah, Kenny's getting pissed.
I know. Brian, hey, have you seen the text he sent me? Man.
Hey, I know, he's like, shut up and move on.
Hey, if Disney wants to sponsor this, we'll talk about Disney for 30 minutes every single episode.
Well, didn't they try to... Can we like,
get Jim Gaffigan on here?
Did they try to do their own trail?
Oh yeah, I've got some insider stuff on that. They got a little bit of legal wrangling on that. They got a cease and desist from the KDA on the use of the Bourbon Trail, so it went away.
Well, thanks a lot, KDA. I was trying to get some free Disney tickets out of that.
I'll say this. They had every right to, because it would look like they just copied and pasted the freaking map.
They basically just took the bourbon passport from, you know, the Bourbon Trail and like it was basically me and Microsoft Paint taking out the KDA logos.
It was bad.
Oh man. All right, so we're gonna wrap up this show, but we're gonna do one last little piece right here, because we gotta give Fred a little bit of a plug here, because you know, one thing about Bourbon Plus and his new magazine is that they don't do reviews, they don't do scores, they don't give best whiskey of the year. However, Fred does do a little bit of rating on the side. And he just gave his lowest score of all time to a whiskey
award. The lowest score I've ever given was just a 48, right? And it was on Forbes, and it was for to OZ Tyler, which is distilled in Owensboro, and it uses the Terra Sintra process, Terra Pure, in the rapid aging. And look, I've always believed that, like, if there's a product that comes out and is tasty that uses that stuff, I mean, I will be on the rooftops talking about it. So this is nothing personal or anything, but I seriously did get, melted plastic in this. Like, I seriously nosed that. That came off. That was the aroma coming out of the whiskey to my nose, and I got drywall, and it just was. it went downhill from there. So it was just not a good whiskey in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, so I've got a, it was weird for me because, like, in, you know, past things that I've done reviews for or the people I've done that stuff for before, you know, they had a policy that you couldn't publish it after a certain score. Forbes did not put that upon me. Like, I could have, you know, had put in my, however I rated it, I rated it, and they were fine with it. So I think, you know, a lot can be said for Forbes for allowing me to do that, but,
you know. I know now not to send you any Pursuit Series.
So would Bleach be like an 8 on your scale then if this was a 48?
Well, you know, I would if I got like that kind of nose, like, so there was not, yeah. There was not, it was not poison. It was not anything like that. I mean, you could drink it, you know, you could drink it and you could mix it with Coke or whatever to kind of strip out some of that, you know, unwanted flavors. But I have been sent things that I thought were poisonous and I didn't even taste it. I smelled it. And I could pick up like the tails real heavy and, you know, I just put it away. And that was when I was reviewing for a tasting panel.
All right. So with that, you know, that's going to be every opportunity to go out there and you can buy yourself a 50 ml or what do people call it? Like airplane bottles. Some people call them nippers. I don't know really what people are calling, but go ahead, spend a dollar or two on them and see if you see if Fred's right or see if you think see if it's okay. Cause, you know, coming from a technology background myself, I was wasn't excited, but it was very like optimistic to see if it would actually stand up to the hype or to whatever it is to see if it actually could compete with, you know, actual pristine true age type of bourbon. But with that, let's go ahead and close out this show tonight. So I want to say thank you again for everybody that came on. And again, thank you to Josh, the producer behind Bullet County, for coming in as well. And, you know, I want to go ahead and say for fellas, go ahead and go around the table one more time. And Carrie, since, you know, we kind of led off with you, we're going to lead off with you again here as well.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. It's always fun. And thank you, Kenny and Ryan, Fred, for all your work on the podcast. I know they're highly entertaining and a lot of people like listening to them. So thank you, guys. This is Kerry from Suburbia, SUBOURBIA.com. Follow me on Twitter at @bourbon_gamer.
375 days till next article.
Start using that Evernote or your notes on iPhone right
it's,
now.
I imagine like behind his computer, it's like, you know, when they have like a, you know, a work safety like issue, it's like 10 days since accident. It's like 30 days since that article and it works up to
love it.
All right. Jordan, go ahead.
Sure. This is Jordan, one of the three guys from Breaking Bourbon. You can find us on the social media platforms at Breaking Bourbon. Similar to Bourbon Pursuit and those guys, our first Breaking Bourbon barrel picks coming out. So if you're interested in that, check out both of those two Patreon sites for Bourbon Pursuit and Breaking Bourbon. And also check us out for our daily calendar updates.
Awesome. What's your next date?
I don't know. We're going to take a little break for a bit, but then we'll start back up in 2019.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Blake.
Am I up? All right, I'm Blake from bourboner.com. Find me at bourboner.com on the Facebook group, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Check out now, I forgot to plug this earlier, but both the Pappy Van Winkle and the Buffalo Trace Antique Collection release maps are now live. So updating those as they come in. So if you're interested, check them out. And actually, Buffalo Trace launched this new thing. If you complain in the comment section about how nobody's able to get these priced or get these bottles or everyone gouges, they're going to send you a free bottle. So go ahead and put your comment in there because they read them all They're happy to read them and go through them. And
that was satire, everybody.
Oh, I'm about to say, I was going to call out like 90 stores tonight. I'm like, yeah.
Yes.
6 years running. Like, it's the exact same comments.
We need to go over some legal things.
Blake, we're going to need you to stay after the podcast tonight.
But you know, also I want to say, Fred and Ryan, thanks for joining on today. You know, this was also the launch for Pursuit Series label, so very excited to kind of see that happen. And as Jordan hinted at as well, you know, barrel picks, we've got a lot rolling out. All of us have a lot of barrel picks that we're doing, and so we're going to figure out the next time we're going to get the internet friends.
Yeah, let's do it.
So,
I think we should do an episode, Kenny, of our Pursuit Series with everyone.
I could interview you two.
Hey, we'll take it.
We'll take it.
Fucking hammer you.
Not going easy on you either.
I'm not coming now.
I thought we were friends here.
Yeah.
But I treat my friends even better than my sources.
So. But again, thank you, everybody. If you do like what you hear, support the show on Patreon. That's where you get access to Barrel Picks Pursuit Series, limited edition t-shirts and koozies and hats and everything else that we do. And yeah, also leave reviews. Ryan, go ahead and close us out.
Thanks guys again for joining us. This is one of my favorite things to do. And I think one of our community's favorite things to do is listen. I don't know why they listen to us talk about bourbon, but I'm glad they do. And appreciate you all taking the time, because I know we all have families and real obligations and one article a year to write. So,
but it's gonna be all about you, Ryan.
I know, I can't wait. In Bullitt County,
in Bullitt.
But thanks for everyone that's watching. And if you have any, you know, show suggestions, comments, feedback, we love hearing from you guys, because this is what we do it for, is for you all. So just keep them coming and we'll keep bringing you the content. Or Kenny will, and I'll just show up.
That's about right.
All right, fellas, I'm going to go watch the Falcons game.
Cheers, everyone.